some of the stars through the airwaves and on the big screen. Coming to you live from Hollywood, it's Rated G Radio with your host, Garrett Miller. Hey, everybody, welcome back to Rated G Radio. We're here on Tuesday to welcome LJ Seller. She's doing a world premiere with us today for a brand new book that hits the stores today called The Gender Experiment. And LJ is going to talk to us about that and so much more in just a tiny little bit. I love having her on. Not only is she a fellow Oregonian, I mean, she's kind of like my, I always call it my litmus test for what's going on in Oregon, but she's my one of my favorite Oregon connections, and I always love having her here on the show. Plus, she's a great writer and a great storyteller. So we'll get to LJ in just a couple of moments. A recap of where we've been, where we're going for the week, as always. So if you're new to the show, or you know, maybe it's been a hot minute since you've tuned in on a regular basis, you can also follow the program and get all of the updates on what's going on just by clicking the follow button, and you'll be able to get a live email or text. You pick it. You tell the system what to do. Every day when we are live, we're live 5 days a week. And we're also now available on iTunes as a podcast. And a lot of times I'll put that link in the show page. But we had so much for LJ in here today. It's like we're highlighting that superstar. So LJ is our superstar of the day. But if you do want to go back and check out any of the episodes on iTunes, you can go and download that for free. Free is a very good price at Tom Peterson's. That's an Oregonian reference. And you can get the most recent 300 episodes. I thought originally they were going to have all like 1,000 episodes archived, but apparently, you know, everybody else does this too. So you get the most recent 300 episodes, and that'll take you back a little, you know, about a year and a couple of months. So I hope you will enjoy that. On Monday's show yesterday, bright and early at 8 a.m., Dr. Ralph Mayer of Hollywood came on to talk about female reproductive health, but also in the second half of the show, we talked about keeping up with Ralph, his entertainment projects ranging from acting and writing. We also talked Child of the 70s, which is always a favorite topic around here. And Ralph gave us lots of insights for bedhead karaoke and so much more. So if you missed that, tune in on the on demand here on Blog Talk or go get it on iTunes. Tomorrow night at 7 p.m. Pacific time, Scott McCuskey, I'm going to get his title wrong, so I'm getting that clarified today, but he's like a senior vice president or senior regional super duper guy. He's with Ladara Corporation, and you know, you see me talk about the Ladara anti-aging cream and also the new wellness teas that we have. By the way, you know, this is not a commercial, but I really only use them and talk about them because I use them regularly, and I actually really like the results that I get from them. But Scott's going to come on and talk about, I believe we're just going to be talking about teas for the hour tomorrow night. Super excited. Thank you, Deb Hall, for coordinating that. Thursday on Rated LGBT Radio, my co-host Rob Watson and I, for the first time this year, it took, you know, 6 months to get to it, but we don't have a guest, where we don't have a guest that we've tried to slot on and get 50 people in on the show. I think so. Rob and I are just going to talk a lot about the articles that he's got blowing up all over the internet talking about LGBT issues. We'll take your calls. He may answer some viewer questions, things like that, but that will be Thursday. And then Friday, at a special start time of 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, Dalia is our VIP guest star. She's actually going to be an hour or two. We are doing a world premiere. Her album actually hits today. It's called Visitor. Her name is spelled D-A-L-E-A, Dalia. And she's an LA-based pop rock singer and just absolutely so much fun. We're going to have her on Friday's show in hour two. The show's going to start in hour one, though, at 3 o'clock, because the second the show's over, I'm racing out of town to go shoot another movie on Saturday, and I have to get the show done early. So Dalia's agreed to let us do that, and I'm thrilled and honored to have her on the show. So today, again, it's always a pleasure to welcome LJ Sellers to the show. She's been on the show at least a couple of times. We've talked about different charity work that she's been involved in, but of course, more importantly, it's all of the books that she writes. And as we talk today, I do remind everybody that, you know, one of the things that we really like about this show is it really puts a spotlight on people who are independent in this world. And that means they're not signed by, you know, the big major book labels or the music labels or the movie studios we're giving them an opportunity to showcase their talent and wares here on the program. So in case of authors, I always say, you know, there's a link to LJ's Amazon, page right here on the show page. Click that. Buy one book and then buy nine others for your friends, or buy 10 of the same, but buy one for you, and you know, give out nine as gifts throughout the course of the year, because you will have gift opportunities. You might as well give out good reading, because that's what you get when you're getting an LJ Sellers book. So LJ, welcome back. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me. It is such an honor and a pleasure to be here. I always enjoy talking to you.
We have so much fun. And you know, and I'm trying to remember, how did we met originally? At like the Long Beach Writers Conference, and through my friend Gail Carline, who's been on the show, you know, a million times. And boy,
yeah,
just
I think
what
that was DrCon.
Yeah. So what are you doing? Lots of traveling these days? Are you staying close to home? What's going on in your world besides, you know, writing fantastic books?
Well, thank you for that. About the same. I typically do two or three of the reader fan conventions a year, because they're just so much fun. I get to connect with my readers and all my writer friends. So I do hope, of course, you know, and then I do sneak in an occasional trip to Hawaii just for some downtime. But this year I'm going to be in, and next year, Left Coast Crime, which is my favorite convention, is actually going to be in Hawaii. So that's going to be very special.
Oh,
so that's
nice.
I know. A wonderful trip that, you know, a vacation kind of trip that I also get to write off on my taxes. Hey, can't go wrong there. So that's kind of what I have planned, and I do hope to do a trip this fall. I'm not sure where yet. BoucherCon is in New Orleans, and I might make that happen. So, yeah, fun stuff.
Fun stuff.
But other than that, I'm writing. You know, you gotta stay. Gotta, you know, do butt in the chair to get this work done. So.
No kidding. Well, you know, and we've talked about that before, and I think that's probably one of my favorite questions to ask people, because I'm trying to dip my toe in the pond. And, you know, thanks to Jeff Michaels, who's my next door neighbor, who introduced me to Gail Carline, and the 7 Degrees of Kevin Bacon finally got me to you, LJ. You know, I'm trying to get this, you know, my first book done, and we're not trying to, you know, cure any of the world's ills. This is just me telling funny little stories. And I have like 95-98% of the book done. And Jeff and Jill keep saying, you know, get the book over to us. We need to, you know, start editing it. And I'm like, well, I just need to sit down and read. I won't press the button to send it off to them. And because I know I've got like six more paragraphs to write. And I was like, well, I'll just keep waiting. And now it's been 6 weeks. And I find every excuse in the world to not do it. And I am so, you know, I'm in awe when I have people like you on who are just like, get your butt in the chair and write. Just do it.
Just do it. That's what I'm going to say. If you're that close, just do it. And it makes me want to ask you, is there a reason you're not doing it? I mean, are you afraid to let this go? Is that what it's about? Sometimes it's hard to put your work out there for the first time.
Well, I don't know how to say that.
I don't really care
if anybody likes it or not, because I'm just doing it because I want to do it. And I'm doing a 3-book series, and it's me telling funny tales about, you know, life in general. And, you know, I've got all 30, and each book has 10 chapters. So I've got all 30 chapters outlined. It's basically fill in the blank. But when I've gone through the, you know, all of the work, really, when I sit down, I have been pretty much, and this sounds really silly, but I'm kind of getting what writers will tell you or tell me, is that, you know, I just let the words come on the page. And that's been how it's happened every time. And now I'm like, oh, I just don't feel those, you know, I don't feel divinely inspired to sit down and write 6 paragraphs or, you know, whatever it's going to be. And I think that's, you know, whether it's lazy or I'm just, you know, so drawn in other directions, I don't know. But what would you be, you know, how can you kick me in the pants?
Well, I don't know. I would, I'd like to do that if I could. But for me, when I really need an idea is I exercise and I focus on what I need to do. And I think about it the whole time I'm exercising until it hits me and I get an inspiration. I go, oh, that'll work. And then my brain's going. So, you know, maybe just kind of I know you work out, just try to think about those chapters while you're working out and make yourself focus on them until you realize, and then it just starts writing itself in your head, and then you're ready to just go sit down and put it on the page.
I love
it. It's worth a try.
Okay. Well, it has to get done, and I need to get it done this week. Because, you know, if I don't, I'm going to have really upset neighbors, and we don't want to do that. But this is not about me today, but I appreciate the career counseling here because I need it. So before
I'm always full of unsolicited advice.
No, I won't.
Just ask
well, you
people
know,
who know me.
Yeah, but you know, when I take a look at someone like you, though, LJ, you know, you have, I don't know, how many books do you have out? Like about 1,000 that you've written?
Yeah, I'm writing my 20th book. I'm working on my 20th book right now.
You know, when you get to that point, though, anything that, you know, you are going to say, I'm going to absolutely take down and take note of it. So I will take any of your unsolicited advice 7 days a week. So thank you very much. But
okay.
as we get ready to go into your new book here, because you never cease to amaze me, because I didn't expect the gender experiment to start talking about intersexed people or transgendered, because I know that you're very friendly to the LGBT community in and around the Eugene Springfield area. You're a big supporter. And I opened up this book and start reading about Taylor. And the next thing you know, I'm getting taken on this journey that really kind of surprised me. How did you decide that, you know, this book was going to be a book that was going to be ultimately what would be a hot topic today? Did you have any foresight that, you know, this is going to be something that was so prevalent in conversation?
I kind of did. I came up with this idea about a year ago, but basically I try to include all kinds of characters in my books. I mean, I have a transgendered FBI agent, for example, and I have a bisexual reporter, and I just try to include all kinds of people because I just think it's important, and my readers seem to like it, and I think it's important for readers and out there, people in general, just to see these people as just people and relate to them, and I think it helps move us all in that direction. And I had never written yet about an intersex character, so I thought, this is a kind of character that I would like to introduce, but I want to find a way to do it that's really interesting and a way that also doesn't really focus on, you know, their actual body or their body type or their sexuality. I don't really want to focus on that. That's not really where I want to take my readers. I just want my readers to see this person as a character who happens to be going through this crazy experience, you know, as thrillers are. So typically you take a fairly normal, you know, run-of-the-mill person and you throw them into a wild situation where they have to, you know, save the world kind of thing. So I wanted to, you know, have this character be that person in the story. So even though it does include intersex characters, it's really not about their sexuality or their
right.
bodies, but only in an indirect way that they were sort of, I don't want to give too much of the story away, but it's only an indirect thing. But basically, I wanted this to be a thriller that people would just get so caught up in what was happening that they would just read it straight through and love, you know, the action and the sequence and the whole question of, you know, how is this going to turn out and, you know, is she going to save the rest of the subjects, you know, of the experiment. And so, and I think readers seem to tell me that I managed to do that, that it's really compelling and that they found this subject interesting, but that they weren't distracted by it. So it's a delicate balance.
Well, and I think that's, you know, as you're writing your 20th book, that, you know, do you go on kind of autopilot as far as like, okay, here's the LJ formula. I do this and then I do that and I do that because it works. And we're just going to change the situation or the people or whatever, and we'll put them in these different things. Do you go through that, or what's your process when you get ready to sit down to write, you know, like a new series or a new character? Because, you know, a lot of the books that you have, you know, have recurring folks that you have, you know, popping in and out.
I do like to bring characters back when I can. Like Agent Bailey, for example, comes back in this story. She was in Point of Control. But I do have a certain style, and I realize that. And typically, my books always have multiple points of view. They are fast paced. I always write them in third person, but a very, very close third person. So when you're in a particular character's head, you see and know only what that character knows. So yes, my books all do have a certain structure. And every once in a while, I think about, you know, oh, maybe I should try first person, or maybe I should try present tense. And then I think, no, this is what I do, and my readers like this, and so, you know, I'm not going to do it just for the sake of experiment. So I do, in a sense, have, you know, a style that I do stick to, but I try to come up with new and interesting characters and new and wild scenarios, and, you know, I try to keep it interesting, you know. And this one, I don't even know where it came from, truly. I get wild ideas sometimes, and I jot them down, and then I start working them and twisting them and playing with them, and then next, you know, they're just really, you know, complex and out there. But it's fun. I really have a lot of fun, and that's the most important thing. I figure if I am having fun, then my readers are going to be having fun. And if I'm writing a scene and I get bored, I think, well, if I'm bored, my readers are going to be bored, so I back up and try again. So, you know.
Well, how often does that happen to you? How often does that happen now that you are doing this all the time, that you are starting to write a scene and going, well, that kind of stinks? Does that still happen regularly?
It happens every once in a while. I try to map things out in advance, you know, and so that when I'm writing a scene, you know, if I get it in my head, you know, then my next question, as soon as I plot a scene, my next question is, okay, how do I make it better? How do I make it more intense? So then, you know, I always make myself do that. When I map out a scene, that I stop and go, okay, let's tweak it a little. Let's ramp it up. So I've gotten in the habit pretty much of making sure I'm adding that juice to every scene so that I don't ever hit those spots where I get bored. But it still happens. I'm human. I have those days where I'm slogging along and have to go, okay, let's wake this up. But generally I try to avoid that because I don't want to waste my time. I don't want to have to rewrite. I want to, you know, get it right the first time if I can. I'm an efficient person. I try to be.
Yeah, there's not a wasted motion in, I think, anything that you do, LJ. So that's another thing that I really admire about you, is that you're just very direct. You are a go-getter, and if you see something, you just make it happen. And that is so refreshing to see in creative types, because, you know, oftentimes, you know, the creative people just like being creative and they're like, oh, you know, and nothing ever gets done. Hence, it takes me weeks to write six paragraphs. And then on the other hand, we have you, who's like, okay, we're doing this, and I've got a deadline. I'm going to put my butt in the seat and I'm going to write X number of thousands of words today. And then magically you just keep cranking up book after book after book.
I'm blessed with a little bit of both, and that I never thought of myself as a creative person, strangely enough. I really didn't until I started writing novels. I always was a journalist. But I have a really good business sense. I like the marketing. I'm industrious. So I'm blessed to kind of live in both worlds and be able to pull it off. And not everyone can. I mean, a lot of writers don't do well out there in the marketing world and in public speaking and all of that. So, and my heart goes out to them, because you really have to be, you know, a multiple personality, you know, to survive in this business. You know, you have to be able to do it all, and it can be very challenging. But fortunately, I like challenges, and I'm willing to put on about any hat I need to and get out there and do what needs to be done.
Because it is a business. You know, it's nice that you've written a book, but if nobody knows that you've written it and you're not talking about it, guess what? Nobody's going to buy it. Nobody's going to be talking about it either. So, you know, it's the business of what's the business of anything. You know, if you're not promoting, you know, it doesn't happen. But okay, and I don't want to dwell on this intersex thing, but can I will tell you, in the last 6 months, I have now met for the first time in my entire life two people who are intersex, and until this year, all, you know, 27 years of my time here on Earth, I've never met anybody who's been intersex. I've never heard the term intersex before. And then, you know, here are now two wonderful people who I've met and I call dear friends. And then I pick up your book and here we are talking, you know, one of the main character, you know, is dealing with this particular case. So have you heard the term intersex before? And I promise I'm going to move on. I'm just like shocked because this is such a new term for me to hear from anybody.
You know, I have, and I've been familiar with it for a long time, and I'm not even sure why it came to my attention, but I've always been very intrigued by it because it's such an interesting phenomenon, and I always think about these people and think, what must this be like, and how do they live their lives, and, you know, and there's so many factors going on, but it's true that you don't ever meet anybody who introduces themselves that way or is willing to talk about it, but the fact that you met two in the last 6 months means that people are starting to talk about it. People are starting to just say, hey, this is who I am. Whereas a year ago or five years ago, they would never bring it up because
ever.
You wouldn't hear it. So now I think because of what's happening in the media with high-profile transgender people, I think, you know, more people are willing to just talk about who they are. And in fact, when I was writing this story, I had a connection to a very close friend of the family. You know, when I was mentioning it, said, oh, that's me. And I didn't know. I've known this person my entire life.
Oh my gosh.
Know. And so it's, you know, it makes me realize, you know, there are a lot more people like that out there than you ever will know. And you could be sitting next to someone at work like that and not know. And you could be really crazy about that person. You think they're the funniest, greatest person in the world. And you don't know that about them. And you may never know. But hopefully now, and by writing these stories and putting it out there, more of these people will be able to just say, hey, this is who I am. This is what I'm dealing with. And, you know, more power to them. I think it's great that people are coming forward. And I think there's just a lot more ambiguity in our gender and our sexuality than we ever realized. I think it's really a continuum. And I think there's a lot of bisexual people out there that, you know, that don't, may not even realize it or don't label themselves that way. I just think there's a lot more, you know, ambiguity and diversity. And I just think that gender is just, it's just not, you know, one of the other. It's just not like that anymore. Sexuality is just a very, very, it's very fluid. It really is.
Yeah.
And I think it's time that people are coming to grips with that. Our black and white way of looking at everything just really needs to go away. It's not working.
Well, it's not working. And I think, you know, now that I live here in Southern California, I run into, you know, everybody along the rainbow spectrum, you know, LGBTQI, straight, you name it. And that never really seems to be an issue. But I will tell you, I get a lot of calls and a lot of emails from listeners who are listening from middle America or around the country, even around the world. And they were like, I loved it when you had so-and-so on because that's my life. And where I live, I can't be, you know, authentic. I can't live out loud. I can't do, you know, whatever it is. And when you have a book like, you know, The Gender Experiment, where you're talking about, you know, just, you know, this is just, you know, part of who I am. I think it really helps normalize, you know, people who are out there going, I'm weird or I'm unusual. It's like, no, you're just like, you know, a lot of other people that are out there. And, you know, here's an example of, you know, what's going on in the world today. So you don't feel so isolated. Because I think a lot of folks, if, you know, they're, and you could be color of your skin, you know, your family or whatever the case is, you kind of get on those, oh, nobody's going to like me, or I'm weird, and there's nobody out there who's going to understand. And you help kind of dispel a lot of those things in all of the books that you write, because you have such a diversity in your characters that you bring to life. So I thank you for that.
It's my pleasure. And one of the, I got to say, just one of the quick thing, one of the greatest compliments that I'm getting for this book is people saying, I love these characters, or I fell in love with the character, the main character, and I thought, that is amazing. I love that someone, you know, said I fell in love with this character, because I didn't really expect that. I expected them to be intrigued or, you know, relate to her or, you know, root for her, but I didn't really expect that. And so I'm just so happy that I wrote a character that, you know, that people really, really bonded to. And that, you know, and that just, it propels that whole thing that we're talking about where, you know, if you can bond to a character that's like that, then you could bond to someone that, you know, that you meet that's, like
yeah,
that.
You make it just, you know, normal. It's not anything weird or unusual. It's just, oh, I love, you know, so-and-so in LJ's book. And then you meet somebody like that in real life, and you're like, oh, well, I must love you too, because you're really cool. So
yeah.
You know, I just think that's,
well, you
that's
know,
nice
I also, I expect to get dinged for it too. You know, I really know that there are readers who will have a lot to, who will have something to say about the fact that I have intersex characters, or they'll accuse me of having an agenda. Or, you know, and I've already had someone posted on my Facebook page something about, well, with all the issue now of people not knowing where to use the bathroom, I think I'll have to pass on this one. So, you know, there are people who are going to just watch, which is fine with me. I would rather,
yeah,
if you don't like the idea, don't read the book. You know, that's fine with me. You know, just,
yeah,
don't read it knowing you're going to hate it and then write me a bad review. That'll be
it. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, in the same breath, you know, it, no publicity is bad publicity. So even if you get somebody doing that, you know, there's your opportunity to, you know, showcase. Well, there you go. So it is, you're still getting people to talk about you. And I guess that's a good thing, you know, even
right,
if it's not, you know, whatever. So, yeah. That's,
right. And some people will read the book just because, you know, cranky Uncle Fred said not to, you know. So,
right.
You know, there's always that. Yeah.
I love it when cranky Uncle Fred talks, because then, you know, you got to go out and do the opposite of whatever cranky Uncle Fred says. So
exactly.
What do you think about all the talk that's going on, you know, and not necessarily politically, so we're not talking the presidential campaign or anything like that, but, you know, with all of these bathroom bills and things like that that are being talked about around the country, what's the thought back in Oregon about what's happening across the country?
Well, generally, we're a pretty progressive state, or at least most of us in the Willamette Valley, Portland, Eugene, Salem. So, you know, the idea here is just, you know, get over it. You know, it's a bathroom. You know, just put a sign on the door that says bathroom, and, you know, and yeah, put in two or three of them and not worry about, you know, who's using what. And that's the way a lot of restaurants here just have two bathrooms. They've had the two bathrooms all along, and now they've taken the gender signs off the door. They're just bathrooms, you know, and some of them actually will put up a little something a little jokingly like, you know, you know, we don't care. We don't care who you are. Just use the bathroom, you know. So it's, I feel very blessed to be here in a very progressive place. So generally, I think the trend is moving in that direction. And I think we're going to see more and more of that all the time where, you know, where we just do away with the idea that, you know, we're going to funnel people into one bathroom or another, you know. And but I think they're obviously making way too much of it. The idea that anyone is afraid of being accosted by a transgender person in the bathroom is just ridiculous. And I will get slightly political here, but honestly, there have been more Republican senators arrested for sexual misconduct in bathrooms than all the transgender people in the world. So
combined,
you know, they're worrying about the wrong thing.
Well, it's and I think that what kind of just throws me for a curveball here is that there are so many issues out there we could talk about that could be, you know, healthcare, feeding hungry kids, education, music, you know, I mean, the defense budget, we could talk about 7 trillion other things. And here we are, the whole national outcry is we have to know who you are before you can go potty. And I'm staggered at that.
It's so mundane and so bizarre. But, you know, and I'm just going to say this, but, you know, it's the extremist on the right wing, you know, particularly the religious conservatives, you know, they're always obsessed with sexual issues. They just can't let go of it. It's always about sex. It's always about body parts. You know, it's sad, but it's true. They just cannot let go of that. And it would be nice if they would all put some of that energy, like you said, into, you know, feeding children.
Anything
and,
good.
You know, something that made sense to the rest of the world, something that we all care about, you know? I'm not going to go down that road too far. I'm trying to write for a broad audience. So
that's absolutely. Well, let's do this. Everybody, we've had LJ Sellers on the show. We are going to take a quick commercial break. We're going to come back and talk more about the gender experiment and lots of other things that are going on in the world. So sit back, relax. If you need to get a refresher cup of coffee, now is the time to do it. We got 2 minutes, 30 seconds. We're going to hear from our friends at It Matters Radio and then a plug from Rainbow Brew, the great coffee to drink your morning, you know, your morning grind with here. So hang tight. We'll be right back.
Welcome to our discussion of It Matters Radio. Our guest today is Angus McWilliams.
Hey, laddie, let's get on with this thing. I'm on my way to a birthday party for Nessie.
You're throwing a birthday party for the Loch Ness Monster?
Well, first of all, it's not a monster. And second of all, I'm talking about niece Nessie. She's a wee bit of a lovely lass.
I see. Well, okay. Angus, can you give us your thoughts on It Matters Radio?
Hey, wonderful people. They had me on a while back to talk about my book.
Your what?
My book. I wrote a book about the adventures in Scotland.
Oh, I see. A book.
That's what I just said. What are you, a duff man?
It Matters Radio focuses on discovering new talent and bringing important indie artists on the air. Monica, Kenneth, and Carrie offer up meaningful conversation on new music, books, and fun topics. It's unlike any other radio program known to man and woman alike.
You can say that again.
Known to man and woman alike.
Just because I said you can say it again doesn't mean you have to say it again.
I'm just doing my best to show everyone that It Matters Radio basically brings variety, fun, and entertainment with a sincere desire to discover new topics and talent.
Why didn't you just say that?
I just did.
Hey, laddie, remind me when I can listen.
It Matters Radio is on every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific.
You Americans with your different time zones. We only have one time zone in Scotland.
And that would be...
That would be the time to down a pint or two of ale.
It Matters Radio, for the best in conversation, music, books, and entertainment. Join us Thursday evenings at 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific. Discover the depth, diversity, meaningfulness, caring, guest-focused, friendly, enjoyable atmosphere of It Matters Radio with Ken, Monica, and Carrie.
That's a mouthful if I ever heard one.
Yes, and I'm going to go brush my teeth now. It Matters Radio.
When it comes to coffee, freshness is queen. That's why Rainbow Brew believes you should have the freshest coffee, roasted to order in small batches and delivered to your door within a couple days. Whether you're purchasing for a coffee shop, restaurant, or home, Rainbow Brew is your one-stop shop for fair trade and organic coffee. offering many unique blends, including AM950's own Blue State blend. That's Rainbow Brew, the Queen Bean, a proud sponsor of the Morning Grind. Online at rainbowbrew.com. Brew something good today.
So we're back with LJ Seller. She's the author of The Gender Experiment, which hits bookstores and online today. So we talked a little bit about that in the first half of the show, LJ, but tell us, can you kind of tell us maybe about some of the characters we're going to meet and fall in love with, and a little bit more about what the story is involved with, and get these numbers on Amazon to just, you know, send you up to number one?
Ah, that'd be lovely. The main character is Taylor. She's a morgue intern. She's a college student, but she's working in the morgue as an intern, and she really likes her job because she's shy, and she figures dead people are easier than live people. But she discovers that she processes a second body that has this mixed genitalia, and they're both the same age, and she just finds it very unusual that there are two people, you know, who are intersex in this city, and they're the same age, and they both have turned up dead in a supposed accident. And she finds that statistically really unlikely. And when she thinks about the fact that she is also a intersex person of the same age, that she just finds it so bizarre that she starts looking into it, and she discovers that all of this, they were all born from the same clinic 20 years ago. So she knows something is going on, and that she believes that these people they didn't die accidentally, that they're being targeted, and that she is probably on that list as well. So then she needs to find out what's going on, and, you know, with the idea that they're, and she finds this list, and there are others, and her idea is to warn the others and save them and find out what's going on. She also meets a homeless man named Jake, who's a down-and-out reporter who lost his job and ended up homeless, and they end up working on this together. And then eventually, at some point, Agent Bailey, from, you know, who was also in Point of Control, Jake actually gets Agent Bailey involved because they need help. And she comes in and does her thing, which she's pretty kick-ass. So that's the basic idea. And I could tell you more about what was really going on, but I don't want to reveal some of the, you know, the twists in the book to find out, you know, why. But it is military medical research that was going on, and it kind of went astray. But I'm not going to reveal what they were trying to accomplish, but they ended up with this kind of side effect that they didn't really expect. The book is packed with action on every page, and it just keeps moving right along. I don't know. What else can I tell you without revealing too much of the story?
Okay, here's my big question. This is set in Colorado in the Fort Collins area, instead of like the Willamette Valley. How did you pick this particular landscape for your new characters?
Well, particularly because the military base was there, mm-hmm. Fort Carson, and I wanted to set it around the military
Fort Carson.
Base. Because it's military research. Plus, you know, the whole Jackson series is set in Eugene, so I'm trying to get out of Eugene when I write my standalone thrillers. And two of the most popular military bases that people like to go to, I mean, when they're enlisting anyway, is Fort Carson and then Fort Washington. Is it Fort Washington, Fort Lewis? I think maybe it's Fort Lewis in Washington State, but I just set a book in Washington. So by process of elimination, this just seemed like one of the nicest places to go. Plus I wanted to go there to actually see the landscape and do the research, and Colorado is a place that I wanted to visit. Anyway, my dear friend and writer Peg Brantley lives there,
yes.
In Denver. So
love Peg.
And so, you know, it just made sense to set it in the, you know, the Colorado Springs and Fort Carson area, because it works. It works for the story. And it was like I said, it was a nice place to go and visit to do the research. So,
yeah.
And, you know, there are several military outposts there in that area. So it's a highly militarized kind of community. So it worked.
So what's involved when you book a flight to go out and see Peg and say, hey, by the way, I'm also going to do some research for the book. What kind of things do you have on your to-do list when you're out gathering facts?
Well, first we started with a visit to the morgue. So that's always good fun. Yes, you have to be a little more morbid to enjoy this job. But yeah, no, it was actually very fascinating. But because Taylor is a morgue attendant, I wanted to go to the Denver morgue. I wanted to see it. So we did a big interview. And Peg came with me, of course, because she writes crime fiction. And so it was fun for her, too. So we went to the morgue. We interviewed the director. We walked around. We saw the, you know, all the rooms and everything. We almost got to witness an autopsy. But we missed it. And, you know, and it was such a weird thing. I mean, I really wanted to see an autopsy, but then, you know, and then I was kind of hoping that we would get to, but what that meant that I was hoping that someone was going to die.
Right. Yeah.
So I was like, no. So that was a weird sense. Anyway, so we didn't get to see the autopsy, but, you know, we did get to see just about everything else. And we walked into a cooler with a bunch of dead bodies. And so I was there. I mean, I got to experience it, and I needed that, you know, to make those scenes in the morgue very real. Even though there's only like one or two at the very beginning of the book, they needed to be very real. So then after that, I had set up in advance an interview with some FBI agents in their task force office in Denver. So we went and we interviewed several FBI agents, and we talked about their role there and how they would have got involved in the story and what they would handle. But I needed to see the office there, and Peg also had some questions about a book she was working on. So, and then we drove down to Fort Carson. And we took a tour around Fort Carson and took a look at the landscape. I had never been on a military base before. So that was very interesting and very helpful. And I need to see things. I just sometimes, you know, and you can Google map a lot of stuff, but I need to see it. I need to be there. I need to know what it looks and feels like, you know, from my perspective. So that's what we did. We had we did that over a couple of days, and we had a great time and learned a lot. I love the research. One of my favorite things about writing is doing the research and asking the questions and getting information that I never expected.
Well, it's the reporter in you, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
So when you called up Fort Carson and said, hey, I'm going to come down and do an interview, you know, what kind of access do they grant to you on a military base?
Well, we didn't actually interview anyone on the base. We just did a tour of it. So basically to get into the base, you have to, you know, you have to go in and show your ID. They run a background check, basically. But they'll let just about anybody on the base. I don't know about let just about anybody, but they will really let us on the base. I really don't know what their standards are, but we just told them we were visiting, you know, and just doing some research. And anyway, but we both got in. But, you know, you have to have car insurance, and you have to be able to prove that. I thought that was interesting. But yeah, they ran a background check on both of us, and Peg had to show her car insurance and driver's license and all that, and then they just let us go in, and we pretty much just drove right around the base. But no, we didn't actually interview anyone on the base. No, I really did not expect the military, anyone in the military, to chat with me about.
That would have been a coup. You know, hello, General. I'd like to talk to you about this, you know, murder mystery that I'm writing, and it's going to involve your military base here. Would you like to,
right,
you know?
You're going to be the bad guy. That's always the thing, is then they say, oh, well, send me a book, you know, when it's done, and then you send them a book, and it's like, oh, by the way, I forgot to tell you that, you're the antagonist of this story.
Yeah, yeah.
And everyone's going to hate you.
Oh.
Yeah.
So what, as far as promotion for the new book here, The Gender Experiment, by the way, it's available today on Amazon, and go to LJ's website. You can do that. Both of the links are on the show page. So click that, go buy the book, buy 10 copies, one for you, 9 for gifts, and you'll thank me later. By the way, I didn't know this until recently because I'm slow. You can buy your download, and then you can also gift the downloads to other folks. So you don't have to actually say, well, I don't know. Just do that. You can gift it out and send it out, and then magically somebody's going to get the gift of reading a great book. So do that and support LJ. And if, you know, let's just say for whatever reason you don't like The Gender Experiment, she's got 20 other books. So just go and buy, you know, the other 19 and add them to your Kindle and start reading and having a reading party. Maybe have a book party. Do you ever do book parties, LJ?
Not exactly. Although I've done some fun things where I've met with readers. In fact, I got invited to this group that meets at a tavern here in Eugene called the West End. And they contacted me and said, by the way, there's a whole group of us here that read your books and we love them. And we would really like for you to just stop in and chat with us some night during happy hour. So
wow.
I did. And it was, oh God, it was just so much fun. We were just sitting around talking, and they were just talking about their favorite stories and scenes. And they said, oh yeah. Mm-hmm. And love that when the dead body showed up out there by the wetlands. Oh, and you know what? There was a there was a trailer. I mean, in your story, you know, you had a guy that lived in a trailer parked in our parking lot out here, you know. So they were just having so much fun talking about all the places in Eugene where things have been set and asking me questions. And, you know, and then we just chatted about all kinds of things. But it was just one of the funnest 2 hours I ever had. But it was just so fun that this group. But what happens, that happens is somebody will start reading my books and say, oh, you got to try these. They're so good. They're set in Eugene. And then somebody else starts reading them. And then this whole group of people is reading them. And then there's another place where I hang out where I go dancing. Three or four nights a week. And for a long time there, nobody there even knew I wrote novels. And the one night I was chatting about it, and this guy said, oh, I love mysteries. I love mysteries. Let me try your book. So he started reading my books, and now he's telling everybody, oh, my God, you got these books. And I've got another thing going at this the club where everyone is reading my books, and they're coming up to me going, oh, God, I'm on the third book. And, you know, they're asking me questions, and I'm thinking, I wrote that 6 years ago.
Right.
Yeah. But anyway, so I do have a lot of fans here in Eugene, so I do a kind of lot of impromptu sort of book parties.
I think that would be a struggle for me as a creative type to say. Tell me about that. You know, that in book one, you know, chapter four, when this happened, you're like, did I write that? Do you ever get to that point where people start asking you, and then you're like, that was my favorite too. You know, good job.
I know. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You do. You just have to wing it, because sometimes I really don't remember. You know. But fortunately for me, when I was writing the series, I got to where I started keeping a data file where if I made a decision about what kind of car a person drove or what their ringtone sounded like or what their favorite, you know, music was, I would write that down in the database, because, you know, that way I would have it and I wouldn't have to go back and search back through manuscripts. Boy, that got old quick. So I do at least keep a lot of that information all together in one place. But still, there's so many details of these stories that, no, I can't remember. Not after 20 books, no.
So how do you stay creatively charged? I mean, because, you know, at some point I go like, okay, I've written 20 books. I'm done. There's not a new fresh idea in my head. But yet you still come up with new books all the time.
You know, I don't know, and it amazes me that I do, because that is my biggest fear, so I'm going to run out of things to write about. I know some authors don't worry about that, but I do. But then, you know, life is just so interesting, and there's always so many new things happening culturally, and there's always new crimes. You know, you read the newspaper every day, and there's always something, you know. It's like, well, that was new, and that was bizarre. And, you know, I take notes on all of this stuff, and I keep files and files and files of notes. And so when I'm looking for a story idea, I just start reading through my note files and going, oh, well, maybe I can take that idea and, oh, that idea, and put them together and come up with something. Yeah. So if the stuff is out there, I just have to stay tuned in. I'm a voracious news junkie, and I'm always constantly reading what's in the news, what's happening here, and you just have to pay attention, and the real world will give you all the ideas you're ever going to need. So
yeah,
and I have a lot of natural energy, so I don't ever lack for that. Thank God.
So do you think that you know, you're a, well, I don't even know. I was going to say, I was talking about the ideas, but now you've covered it. So, okay, if we can shift topics here for just a minute. By the way, LJ Sellers, just, you know, promo. Go buy her books today. You will thank me later. If you've read her books, you know how fast you get hooked in them, what page turners they are, and that you can't wait to start on book two if you're on book one and book three and book four and book five and so forth. So please go get her books. I promise you will thank me later. I've yet to read one of her books where I'm like, oh my gosh, because like she said, you know, if it's a, you know, it's not a page turner, it's not interesting to her, it's not going to be interesting to her readers. And she proves that every time. So go buy her books, and The Gender Experiment's out today. You were kind enough, LJ, to talk about something that was happening outside of the book industry in your personal life recently. Can you share a little bit about what's going on behind the scenes?
Well, I recently sat in court and watched my son be sentenced to 30 months in prison, and that was a really difficult moment for me, and I ended up posting about it, and I hesitated for a while, and because, you know, you never know how people are going to react to things, but, you know, but that's what our online communities are for, is to share those moments, and the reason, you know, he's going to prison is because he's an addict. It's more complicated than that, but it always is, because addicts, you know, the disease leads them to make some very bad decisions. But But the, right now what's happening in this country is there is an epidemic of heroin addiction and opioid addiction, and it's huge. And I'm reading about these numbers every day where in Ohio, where they've had 485 overdoses already. It's May. They've had 485 overdoses in the state of Ohio in 5 months. And last year in the whole state for the whole year, I think they had, 100 or something. So, I mean, it's crazy. It's a quadruple the rate, and it's halfway through the year. It's crazy. There's just, and people are, it's partly because people are lacing heroin with fentanyl, and which is an incredibly powerful pain medication. But anyway, it's crazy, and it's happening everywhere, and it's happening in suburbia. It's happening to white middle class people. It's happening to 40-year-olds who, have an accident and they get hooked on pain medication, then they can't get anymore, and then they go out and they start using heroin because they need something, because now they're an addict. And it is everywhere, and I just decided that so much of it is going on, and there's so many, and for every addict, for every person that this is happening to, there are 3 to 5 to 10 people affected by it in their lives, people that love them, you know, that are watching them go through this and wanting to help them. So, I mean, it's just one of those issues that's just so huge. There's, that it just mushrooms, and there's millions of people affected by it. So I thought, I'm just going to put this out there because we need to make changes. We need to truly, because my son was on a, I'm going to add this in there. He was on a waiting list for treatment. He wanted treatment. He wanted to get better. He was on a waiting list, and he had been for, I think, 6 weeks. So if instead of being on that waiting list, if he had been able to walk into treatment the day he decided he needed it and get admitted and get treatment that day, he would not have made the decisions that led him to be incarcerated and now doing, 30 months in prison. Mm-hmm. So this is the issue that we need. We need more treatment centers. We need more treatment. We need less incarceration, more treatment, more diagnosis. We need more mental health specialists. There's a lot of people with mental illnesses that are self-medicating. I mean, I could go on and on and on about this issue, and I'm not. But I wrote it for those reasons because I think it's just becoming one of those things that everybody I know is touched by someone who is an addict, whether it's alcohol or drugs or whatever. So, and we need to talk about it, and I decided I'm not ashamed of this. This is, this is a disease, and he's in his own way a victim, and he had his biological father was an addict. So in some ways, none of this is even his fault or mine. It's just shit that happens, but I'm going to talk about it because I want to be able to, if I can help anyone reach out and decide that they're going to go in and get treatment if they can, or they're going to finally talk to the person in their life who they know is an addict and they want to reach out to them and say, hey, I know what's going on. Let's get you some help. So, if I made a difference in one person's life by sharing that story, then it was worth it to me.
Thank you for doing that. I am so out of touch with, things that are going on like that. I thought that the new big thing was meth, or meth has been the end thing for people who want to, ruin their lives for, the last 10 years. So is it heroin that's making the big comeback, or do you know what's happening?
Heroin is making a huge comeback, and it's partly because of its connection to the pain medication that people can get legally. So, people get it and because it's a similar sort of body response. So apparently now heroin and other opiates are whatever, the new thing that everyone is doing. And part of this, because heroin apparently has gotten really cheap and easy to access. And for example, meth in the state of Oregon has got much more difficult because they made it illegal to sell cold medicine, pseudoephedrine, in stores.
Okay,
so in Oregon, you can't walk up to the store shelf and buy 20 packets of pseudoephedrine or whatever, and then go home and make some meth. So you have to go to the pharmacy counter and get it from the pharmacist, and he's only going to let you have one, So at least, and I don't know if, I think other states are doing that too. So in some ways, meth has gotten a little bit harder because of, the crackdown and, the laws and things that have been put in place. So maybe that's part of why people are shifting to heroin, or why heroin has gotten cheaper, or, who knows? And maybe it's just because heroin is good fun. I don't know. I mean, I'm just saying, obviously people do heroin because it makes them feel really good, at least for the at the time. So,
I've struggled with addiction in the past. My choice was always alcohol, and there would be days, LJ, where I'd be like, well, I have to drink today because I'm mad at you for this. Oh, well, today we're going to drink because I'm happy about this, or I'm going to drink because there's nothing going on. And so when I made the decision to, you know, say this is going to be done, I now look back and go like, I don't even know who that person was, because now it's that life and all of those, you know, choices I made are just so far in the past, and it just seems crazy to me. So I don't understand it. But I do know that when I drank, I loved the numbing that I got from it. But I don't know what type of a feeling I would get from a drug that would make me go, that feels really good. So I think I need to do this again. I'm not going to try it, but I don't understand the euphoria people get off of these things that would make them want to continue, because, you know, you do it once and you're basically hooked. Isn't that how it works?
Yes. For a lot of people, that is true. Not everyone, but yes. And, you know, my understanding, because my son and I have had conversation about this, because honestly, he's been a heroin addict for 13 years and I've been dealing with this for a long time. Oh my God, I can tell you a story that would make you weep. But I won't. But no, apparently it is. It's amazing. I mean, the feeling of, you know, getting high on heroin is a euphoria that's unlike anything else. And for people who have any kind of anxiety, for example, he suffers from anxiety, and he comes by that naturally from me. So, you know, that you know, I mean, they're seeking that kind of relief where, you know, for an hour of their day that they don't, you know, they're not worried or afraid or freaking out or something. And so for some people, the euphoria is even greater, even more powerful, because it's a relief from, you know, their usual state of, you know, oh, my God, kind of thing. So, but yeah, and of course, I've never done heroin, so I don't know.
Right,
I'm always
right.
What I know. But I wanted to point out, I wanted to mention that I too have struggled with addiction. I'm a recovering alcoholic. For me, it's been 27 years, but I know what it's like, you know, to abuse something, because, you know, some sort of substance, because it's a lot of fun. So, you know, that's the thing. And that's one of the things that's happening, I think, with parents and kids. And the messages that we put out there is that we, you know, we say, don't do drugs, but we forget to say, oh, by the way, they are fun. We admit that freely, you know, drugs are fun, but they're only fun at first, and then this happens, and this happens, and this happens.
Right.
But I think if we're not honest with young people about the fact that they are fun, that they're not going to trust us. You know, that, you know, when they do try them and go, oh, well, this is fun. No wonder they didn't want me to do this. They just don't want me to have fun. You know, so I think we need to be just more honest about the fact that, yes, you know, drugs, alcohol, yes, it can be fun. That's why people do it, but can also cause you huge problems in your life and can ruin your life or kill you, you know. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, we need new messages. We need total honesty on this subject.
And so, for the fact that you said your son was waiting to get into treatment, is this a Is this a problem that is prevalent more in Oregon, or is this nationwide? Because I'm not familiar with a lot of at least. People don't walk up to me and say, hey, by the way, I shoot heroin, you know, want to try some? That's so unfamiliar to me. So having people that can't get into treatment seems kind of like a foreign concept. So I would think that if you want treatment, you should be able to get it. Is that,
well,
how does that work
in Oregon? You're right. That is naive. And I'm sorry. No, I really don't know the statistics because I'm not familiar with it. I've tried to be informed and to read, but I do know that Oregon, for example, at least here we have Oregon Health Plan, where people who are on Oregon Health Plan, which means it's basically our version of Medicaid, you know, people on Oregon Health Plan can get treatment, but still they have to get on a waiting list because there's a shitload of people that want treatment, and there's only X amount of money, and there's only a few treatment centers that will take Oregon Health Plan. Now, for example, if you happen to have $20,000 laying around, you know, you can walk into Serenity Lane right now.
Okay. It's all money.
It's really about money. And, you know, if you in inpatient treatment, it's horribly expensive, and some insurance companies pay for it, some don't. A lot of these people that are out there on the streets using drugs, they don't have insurance.
Right.
A lot of states don't have, are not even signed up for, you know, the Affordable Care Act. So they aren't even getting federal money, you know, to help these people. So I imagine it's worse in a lot of states besides Oregon, because at least here we're a fairly progressive state. We do have Oregon Health Plan. We do try to take care of people as much as we can, but it's a limited amount of money, and treatment is very, very expensive. So it's, you know, inpatient treatment is, you know, $20,000 minimum for three weeks. So it's expensive. I know. Yeah, I know.
So
and I said, my son's been doing this for 13 years. So believe me, at some point, you know, everyone runs out of resources and said, yeah, you got to get on the waiting list and get the state to pay for it this time because I can't, you know. So
right.
There's not enough money being put into the, you know, into the problem. And so that's what I said. We need to, you know, stop funding the prisons and start funding the treatment centers.
So what kind of treatment does your son get while he's incarcerated right now? How is he being helped to get healthy?
Well, fortunately, he's eligible for a program, and I think they're going to send him somewhere. I think they're going to actually send him to a treatment, and I don't exactly know that. I'm still learning because this is his first trip to prison, fortunately, so I'm still learning. But he says he is eligible for a six-month treatment program, so I think the last 6 months of his incarceration will be spent in an inpatient treatment center. So he is going to get it. So I'm very happy about that. And he is too.
Very good. Well, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, our time is starting to run towards the end of the hour, which I cannot even believe. LJ, before I let you go today, do you have maybe a minute or so of inspired wisdom for the listeners out here for whatever you want to talk about?
Oh boy. I'm lucky in that I found something that I love to do and I'm able to do it well enough to make money at it. But I just would encourage everyone to really figure out what it is that you love to do in your life and to do that. And even if you can't make money at it, do it anyway. You know, life is short. You know, don't wait for tomorrow. Don't wait. You know, it's like, oh, I'll start, you know, I'll learn to dance when I'm, you know, when I'm done with this job, or I'll learn to dance after my kids are out of school, or I'll take up golf later. You know, we're always putting things off and saying, I'll do that, you know, when I get through this or that. But my advice is, you know, live now. Live right now. Do the things you want to do right now. And if you can find something that you love to do that you can actually make money at, then you'll never really work a day in your life, because if you love what you do, it doesn't feel like work. And not everyone has that opportunity. Someone's got to work in the factories and make the widgets. I get that. And God bless those people that do. I've done my share. But, you know, but enjoy the rest of your life, you know. Do the things that you love to do. Don't wait. Do it now. Life is short.
There we go. Everybody, it's been LJ Sellers. Her book is The Gender Experiment. It's out today. Go buy it on Amazon. Again, buy 10 copies, one for you, 9 for gifts. And LJ, we will have you back soon. I thank you for being here today. And for everybody else, I want to remind you that tomorrow night we're going to have Scott McCuskey. He's going to be talking about the Ladara Certified Wellness Grade Teas and so much more. On Thursday on Rated LGBT Radio, my co-host Rob Watts and I will be talking about a variety of topics. And then on Friday's Friday Night Dance Party, which starts at 3 p.m., Delia is our Hour 2 world premiere with her new CD called Visitor. I will let you know. I'm at an acting workshop last night, come home, getting all my, you know, social networking types of things answered. And the phone rings at 11:30 at night. And I'm like, oh my God, it's 11:30 at night. Who's calling me? Because, you know, I don't talk on the phone. And it happens to be the editor for my new music video, CG Reich. And he goes, hey brother, I just want to let you know, I got it done. You know, and I'm going to send it to you. And so he sent it to me and I played it while we were, you know, chatting on the phone. And I will tell you, it almost brought tears to my eyes because he did such a fantastic job. I worked with Robert Rollins to direct the video last week. We went out in the middle of the desert, in the middle of nowhere, and got it all filmed and then took it up to CG. And he's done a brilliant job editing this. We're going to be doing a world premiere of the video on Friday, June 3rd. That's going to be next Friday. And here's how the world premiere works. Just go to your computer and you can log into the Facebook event for Unlike You world premiere for the video. I'm so proud of this. I'm really excited that you are going to be able to see this. I say first, it's available for everybody, but we're telling all of you first to tune in and check it out. And I'd love your feedback. We're going to be working on some new cool projects. I'm already in the middle of a half a dozen that I will tell you about as soon as I can. And then that's it. So I hope everybody has a great day. I'm so grateful to LJ to take time out of her busy writing schedule to come on here and talk about her book. I love her books. I say that, you know, that's a non-paid endorsement, folks. I'm telling you, her books are great. I wouldn't have her on the show multiple times if she wasn't so fantastic. And have a great day. I'm going to play a little snippet of the song Unlike You. This is the ballad that's on the album that everybody's going nuts for. It'll be released as a single also, I think, on June 3rd. We're working out the details, and that is it. So we'll see you live tomorrow night. Appreciate you being here and love doing you. Have a great day.
I saw your picture just the other day. It looked good in black and white. Memories of love, they dim over time. We never were quite right. Sometimes it's just storm clouds above that drift into our sight. Tears fell like rain, the ocean waves crashing, passing.
You've been listening to Rated G Radio.